you're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up, would you take your family's genetic history into account when you decide whether or not to have children? We'll talk with a woman who's struggling with balancing the risks of passing on Huntington's disease to the next generation. First, we turn to President Trump's pardon of former Arizona Sheriff Joe Arpaio over the weekend. Mr. Arpaio was charged with criminal contempt for defying a court order to stop detaining people based solely on the suspicion that they were in the country illegally. P.S. Ruckman Jr. joins us now. He's an expert on presidential pardons and the editor of the Pardon Power blog. He's also a professor of political science at Northern Illinois University and Rock Valley College. He's co-author of the forthcoming book, Pardon Me, Mr. President, Adventures in Crime, Politics, and Mercy. Professor Ruckman, welcome to Central Time.
My pleasure to be with you.
Well, what was your reaction when you heard about the president's decision to pardon former Sheriff Arpaio?
Well, you certainly couldn't say it was a surprise, because I think it was one of the most telegraphed individual pardons in American history. I'm really hard-pressed to think of an individual pardon that was so publicly teased out in advance in such a non-subtle way. Previously, presidents have promised amnesty, group pardons and whatnot. But pardons for individuals, usually they're pretty coy and quiet, and they kind of stay out of it and don't make public statements.
What about the timing of it? It comes shortly into President Trump's first year in office. Is that unusual when it comes to when presidents typically announce their pardons?
Well, it's shortly, depending upon what your point of reference is. For the last three or four presidents, it's true they have waited 500-600 days. But in terms of American history, most presidents started pardoning in the first month of the term and pardoned every month of the term. So this idea of waiting long periods of time is a relatively new phenomena. But it is about 400 days or so earlier than President Obama's first act of clemency.
Now, this pardon in particular has been seen as controversial. Do you see it as controversial as well? And if you do, on what grounds?
Well, controversy is in the eye of the beholder, to be sure. But the fact that he wasn't even sentenced, he didn't file an application to the Department of Justice, he didn't go through the normal waiting period. All those things are relatively unusual. And by the way, a pardon for contempt of court is pretty unusual in the big scheme of things. So it has a lot of angles to it. And you put together all of those with the fact that he's seen as kind of a crony of the president. And, yeah, you have a classic controversial pardon.
What is the usual process to get a pardon? Are the recommendations made to the president, or does the president typically look out and decide who he wants to pardon, he or she, I guess, on his own?
It's a long, painstaking process, which many of us think needs to be reformed dearly. You file an application with the Office of the Pardon Attorney. They do an investigation of the Bureau of Prisons and the FBI. They make a recommendation to the Deputy Attorney General, who then forwards it to the White House. And sometimes the White House will sit on a recommendation a year or so. And so the whole process, if you're lucky, you could get through it in 3 or 4 years. But some people have waited as long as 10, 11, 12 years. When Mr. Trump came into office, there were 11,000 pending applications. And I think the idea that Sheriff Joe's our case was the most important or most deserving is preposterous.
11,000. So what sort of message does that send? I know you had strong words about this. What do you, to those who are waiting on this list of those who requested a pardon?
Well, two things. It's demoralizing from the standpoint of the applicants, because they will never be cause celebs and get attention. Most of them are, the vast majority of them, people we've never heard of and never will hear of. And the pardon does feed the perception, the false perception, but a real perception nonetheless, that people have, that only the rich and famous and connected get pardons. That's just not true. It's a very small percentage, but this kind of stunt does feed that misconception. And unfortunately, governors and presidents respond to that perception by doing nothing. They figure they're erring on the side of caution because they don't want public backlash.
Now, this has caused that public backlash you talked about, but as you said, there have also been other recent controversial pardons, including pardons made by President Obama, former President Bill Clinton, also George W. Bush. How does this stack up? Is it hard to compare them, or is there a way to look at them against each other?
Well, I have a kind of a different perspective on this because I've studied so widely, but again, it's, you know, controversies in the eye of the beholder. Presidents had pardoned multiple axe murderers, Nazi saboteurs, mafia gangland executioners, child molesters, conspirators, and the murder of Abraham Lincoln. And so, you know, it's quite a rogues gallery. And, you know, in from that perspective, I don't think this one's going to stand out as like one of the most notorious pardons ever. It's definitely quite a stunt, seeing how it's his first act, and it is for kind of a political crony. But in terms of the, you know, top 10 or 20 most controversial pardons ever, no, not likely to make that list.
We're talking right now with P.S. Ruckman Jr., nationally recognized expert on presidential pardons and the editor of the Pardon Power blog and professor of political science at Northern Illinois University and Rock Valley College. We're talking about the president's weekend pardon of former Sheriff Joe Arpaio. And one of the critiques of this particular pardon has been that it disregards the rule of law. Where do you see it on those grounds?
Oh, frankly, that's kind of a generic criticism that could be made of any pardon, because, or any act of clemency, because clemency is a check and a balance. It's part of our system of checks and balances. So I'm not saying it doesn't have any, you know, weight necessarily, but indeed, I think you could argue that with Trump doing this, he was effectively endorsing the behavior of the sheriff. And, you know, I think that, you know, there probably is some meat behind that criticism, but again, the idea that an act of clemency is a flying in the face of the rule of law is a kind of a generic criticism.
Were there other options available? Could the president, for instance, have waited until there had been a verdict on the criminal case and then commuted a sentence? Would that have been?
Sure. Yeah. And that's, you know, even people who maybe, like National Review today came out with an editorial, which is, it wasn't supportive of Arpaio by any stretch, but it does kind of point out all Trump had to do was just wait, you know, let the judicial process run its course. And for all we know, maybe he wouldn't have been found guilty. Maybe there wouldn't have been a need for a pardon. I mean, he did have a defense, you know, whether one finds it convincing or not, he did have a defense. And so, yeah, when you short-circuit the entire process, it kind of makes it look like, you know, that he was guilty. So, ditto with Scooter Libby. George Bush, he at least waited and then issued the commutation after the sentencing.
Putting aside the politics of this particular pardon by President Trump, if a president does pardon someone in the public or the legislative branch or the judicial branch feels that this was a bad decision, what kind of recourse do they have? Is there any?
Well, constitutionally, there are no limits on the president's power, you know, save for the fact that they're federal crimes and except in cases of impeachment. But the political check, obviously, is the power to impeach the president. And, you know, that's probably not going to happen in a Republican-controlled Congress. So that's the way that flushes out.
Have we seen voters in the past, you know, act at the ballot box to voice their displeasure with a pardon from a president?
Well, yeah, political science literature has pretty much documented that Ford's pardon of Richard Nixon was lethal for his campaign. But I think you'd be hard-pressed to find evidence of other pardons having an electoral impact like that. The perception, by the way, that pardoning people has political capital or involves expenditure of political capital is false for the most part for the reasons I stated earlier. The typical person's a garden variety offender, low-level, nonviolence. They've served their time if they ever had any. And there's no political capital to be lost. Trump could be pardoned hundreds of those people or could have by now.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, yeah, my pleasure.
That was P.S. Ruckman Jr., an expert on presidential pardons and editor of the Pardon Power blog, also a professor of political science at Northern Illinois University and Rock Valley College, who's with us there to talk about the president's pardon this weekend of former Sheriff Joe Arpaio.